Welcome back, Richard. It's good to see you.
Hey, happy November, right?
To you as well. Yes.
You said in a recent column that holiday season is in full swing.
It is in full swing. And before long, it's going to be, parties and get togethers and obligations and all kinds of things going on. So, but today.
Right. And the clocks.
Yeah, the clocks are changing tonight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Last night they changed. Yeah, last night.
pick up an hour. So what time is it? 6:29. Okay.
Yeah. So
yes, we're in the full holiday mode.
That's right. That's right. And today we're going to talk about today's episode 3 of this series that we're doing on discipline and behavior and punishment and a little bit of all of those things. And you know, we ended last week kind of emphasizing the importance of building a system, you know, thinking about parenting your kid as building a discipline system as opposed to punishment, you know, because again, last week we talked about how, you know, punishment was used initially in research and everything to train animals to do different things. To get pigeons to peck certain things, to get dolphins to look for mines and explosives underwater. So, you know, behaviorism and which is where the idea of punishment really came from, or the way that we think about punishment came from, you know, was really done with animals. And we really need to set that aside, the whole idea of rewards and punishments and start to think about things as a little bit differently.
That's right. We work with parents and children every day. It's one of the things we spend most of our time on, in fact, is helping parents manage children, parents and teachers. And what we want to emphasize today is exactly that we want to build a discipline system, and that takes some planning, and that we want that system to be child-centered rather than parent-centered. I think one of the things that you and I have talked about many times is that parents set out on this journey, and they decide what they want. You know, this is what I want of my children, and they build a system designed to accomplish what the parent wants, rather than a child-centered system. And so the questions that we pose in today's podcast is, are you trying to accomplish what you want? If you're a parent, are you trying to accomplish what you want? What do parents want? Typically, they want their children to be obedient. Some parents want their children to get all A's. Some parents want their children to be superior athletes or musicians or dancers. Right. And parents have these notions in their head of what they want their kids to be and to become. And then they set about shaping the child, usually with rewards and punishment, to accomplish what they want.
Right.
In child-centered parenting, we want parents to provide what children needs in order to grow, mature, develop, and blossom.
Right.
If you think of a flower or a blossom, it begins very tiny, but it gradually opens up and becomes something. And so child-centered parenting sort of takes that notion, is that we want parents to do things that allows the child to develop, okay? So in parent-centered, parents decide ahead of time what they want their children to be or to do.
Right.
And what do we hear? Typically we hear, I want them to be obedient. I was talking to a grandfather last night, and he was saying that he thinks his daughter will be a very good parent because she's going to have very strict rules and boundaries. And I sort of cringed a little bit because I thought, that's what the parent wants. So, and it's going to depend on what kind of child you have, whether or not you're going to be able to set the boundaries exactly where you want them.
That's right. And most of the time, as you said a moment ago, most of the time that parents do that, shape their child and their child's behavior and everything they do through rewards and punishments. And, you know, when you, now one thing to sort of fix ahead of time, fix before it's a problem, with the idea of child-centered is we're not talking about, you know, that the child is first, that the child is, you know, that the child becomes the most important thing ever. And, you know, we're, you know, the child, what the child wants and what the child demands.
Right.
Is automatically. Oh,
please, please don't that. Do that.
Yeah. That's not please a good idea.
No, we are not in any way, shape or form saying, put your child at the center of the universe and allow them. No. We're not saying that at all. No, you don't put the child first. What we're asking you to do is look at the child in a different way.
Right. Because what happens, and again, we've kind of talked about this many times before, and I think that I think most people have heard these types of phrases, you know, the idea of, you know, parent the child you have, not the child that you want. You know,
right.
You have to look at your child and look at their individual strengths and talents and their weaknesses and their deficits and work with them with what they come with. Yes, you can accommodate and you can overcome some of those. The child may be able to overcome some of those weaknesses or something. But, you know, there are some children who, you know, I'm sorry to say, that just won't be able to accomplish some things.
That's right.
It's just the way that it is. And so, when we talk about child-centered parenting, what we're talking about is parenting the child that you have. So you have to look at the child and really figure out who is this child and how can I help her become who she's trying to become or who she will eventually become, not, you know, how can I make my child what I want them to be?
Right. Right. When I was childless, before I started having children, I was thinking if I ever had girls, I would never want them to be cheerleaders. I would want them to be the athletes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not supporting what boys do. And I had two daughters and they both became cheerleaders. What happens.
I remember, much of that as when they became cheerleaders and realized how much of an athlete you have to be a cheerleader. Right. But that is just about as difficult as anything that anyone else is doing on the field or on the court.
Right.
So, you get
they were almost, you almost had to be a gymnast in order to be a cheerleader. I mean, eventually it got to that, but that's what we do. We, before we have children or after we have children, We don't think about who this child is. We think about what do I want this child to become? You know, dads are notorious about that. I want my son to play football. Well, maybe your son would rather do ballet or play the oboe or be a guitar. You know, it's we have to be very careful about who, first of all, who is this child? And we must understand each particular child. And then the second thing is, how can I help that child? How can I help her become what she is to become? You know, one of the things we talk to adults about is the question, what happened to you? Mm-hmm. When did this happen? And so what we want to do is to provide children, help them become what they're supposed to become. How many times have you seen somebody who said, well, I really wanted to be an FBI agent. I really wanted to be a lawyer, but my dad said this, or my parents said this, or I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And the person didn't become what they were destined to become. And so what we're asking parents to do is to think about the child differently. Is your child a block of marble that you have to sculpt and hammer and chisel and turn into something? Or is your child a living blossom that you encourage to open? I mean, that I think the essential difference is many parents begin with, I have to do everything I can to chisel this child down to what I want. Whereas we want you to think about something more like a houseplant, that I'm going to nurture this thing to be healthy and to be robust and to become whatever it's supposed to become.
Right.
To do that, we believe there are three guiding principles for child-centered parenting.
Right. The first has to do, is really solely to do with the child. And that is the child's temperament. Mm-hmm. You know, people talk about personality and all those kinds of things as we get older and everything. But when we look at really young kids, we don't really think about personality. What we think about is temperament. And temperament, by and large, is something that you're born with. I mean, this is, you know, if you've had a couple of kids, you can see the vast difference in their temperament from the time that they were born. Right. You know, some kids are born with that very easy temperament, and they go right into a routine. They start sleeping through the night pretty easily. And those are the kids that everyone, all the other new parents are jealous of, because they fall into those routines and habits very, very easily. But then you have those other kids who are difficult or slow to warm, that are cranky and colicky and irritable, and it's really difficult to soothe them and to help them, you know, to comfort them in general. Mm-hmm. And those kids are much more difficult. And it's not really, you know, you can ask parents who've been through that. It's not really anything necessarily that the parent is doing that is causing that to happen. These seem to be temperamental factors that are that come along with the child.
That's right. Some kids are easy to manage and some kids are difficult to manage. And so the child's temperament is the first of these three principles. The second is something called Eric Erickson's 8 stages of psychosexual development. And we're going to expand on that in a minute. And the third is this balancing act that all parents have to do. So we have these three guiding principles that sort of define child-centered parenting. Child's temperament being one, the 8 stages of development that children go through is the second one, and the balancing act is the third. Bernie, we wrote a book years ago, and we used to laugh about this. You always talked about the three-legged stool.
Right.
Right? Everything has three legs, right? So this is kind of an homage, paying my respects to you by having, I said, I got to get three here to satisfy Bernie's penchant for threes.
That's
so,
right.
So these three are for you. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Three is.
So you talk about temperament.
Yeah.
Right.
But the second
temperament
is
being the first.
Yeah. And you, as you mentioned, the second is those 8 stages of psychosocial development by Eric Erickson. And, you know, we could do, my goodness, we could do a year-long series on Erickson's stages of development, but we'll talk just briefly about it here, because what he did was he took Freud's psychosexual stages of development and he expanded them. Whereas Freud only went through adolescence, Erickson's actually went through the entire lifespan and went.
That's right.
Went through to as we get into advanced age. And so he identified 8 stages overall. There's only the first few or so that are really pertains to kids and adolescents and those of us before we get to adulthood.
Yeah, you're right. You could do a whole year long series on Erickson. Interesting guy. He was actually an art teacher at the Freudian Institute. He was an artist by training. And he was analyzed by Freud's daughter, Anna. And he in turn became a therapist, an analyst, a psychoanalyst. And he developed this thing that we call the 8 stages of development. And he said, at each stage, children struggle to work through the two extremes at that stage. He called them extremes or dichotomies or conflict. Each stage of development has this struggle. And what children have to do, children at first, but later adults, what they have to do during that stage is to resolve that conflict, and hopefully they resolve it successfully.
Right.
And so it's easiest to see in infants. Infancy, he considered the infant stage of development spanning from birth to 18 months. And he said, during that time, children struggle to develop trust, or if they don't, they develop mistrust.
Right.
And the challenge is for children to develop trust in a nurturing caregiver who responds to their needs.
Right.
If you're fortunate enough to have that, you develop a sense, the infant will develop a sense of trust and security, knowing that when I'm cold, when I'm hungry, when I'm wet, when I'm tired, somebody is there to take care of me because I can't take care of myself. So I right. develop this sense of trust, okay?
Yeah.
If you don't have that, if the infant doesn't, then they begin to feel unsafe, that the world is unsafe, the world is unpredictable, the world is unreliable. And then they develop mistrust, which they then carry into the second stage of development.
Right.
Because you know, what was
when we think about that, those first 18 months, what that aligns with very nicely and is the idea of developing attachments. You know, when we think about children who have attachment disorders, for example, it's usually during those first 18 months or so when a child develops an attachment to their parent. And when that attachment doesn't happen, we talk about things like reactive attachment disorder or other types of attachment disorders where kids, as you said, develop this mistrust of not only their caregivers, but of the world in general. And so they have a really difficult time forming relationships. And, the remarkable thing, you know, just amazing thing to consider is that that what happens during those first 18 months can be seen, you know, throughout the rest of your life. You know, people who have a really difficult time during that first stage of psychosocial development, you know, you can see those same difficulties lingering throughout, you know, even adulthood. And so right. these stages are really important. And as you said, each one sort of feeds into the next. And so, you know, those second, that second stage of development, you know, from about 18 months to about 3 years, now you're talking about the conflict, the battle between autonomy on one end and shame on the other end.
That's right. And think about that. That's toilet training. That's when it's ages 2 and 3. Okay. And right. that's what do we do during those stages? One is toilet training and the other is you encounter the terrible 2s and 3s. Okay. Right. And so now this child enters this next stage of development where you want them to begin to develop autonomy, some control over themselves, over their body and over their schedules and what they're doing and not be shamed into doing things. And, right. and so if the child is fortunate enough to make it through infancy and have a sense of trust and is attached to a nurturing caregiver, they bring those positive qualities and feelings into the next stage of development where they now develop autonomy that I am my own person, I can do things myself, which is exactly what you want to accomplish with toilet training and the terrible twos. The terrible twos are just kids' way of saying, no, I can do it myself. They're not being defiant. They're being independent.
Right. It's their way of exercising some autonomy. And
it's
and we have to be careful, you know, when parents respond so aggressively to a child's to a toddler's you know, proclamation of no, you know, they're you know, no, I can do it. When a parent responds quite negatively to that and aggressively to that, what happens is the child then can develop that sense of shame that, well, I'm not supposed to do these things right. independently. I'm supposed to be dependent upon somebody else. I'm not supposed to, you know, try to do things for myself. And again, you know, those are tendencies that can then be seen later on down the developmental spectrum, down the developmental line. And so all of these pieces build upon each other. You know, you have that sense of trust, and that sense of trust allows you to build autonomy, and that autonomy allows you to continue to develop in these healthy ways to toward independence and self-reliance.
Right. So in just these first two stages, from birth to 18 months and then 2 years to 3 years, in both we see that the parent's role is to shepherd the child through each of these phases. That's our job. Our job as parents is to help the child to resolve these conflicts successfully. Mm-hmm. Children, it's not our job to sculpt the child using rewards and punishments so that they're obedient or they're straight A students or they're good athletes or they do what we want them to do. They're compliant and obedient. Our job is to shepherd them through. Remember, the child is struggling with the conflict. Our job is to assist the child with the struggle.
Right.
So child-centered parenting is helping the child to navigate those challenges. In the first stage of development, child-centered parenting was to give that child a sense of trust and security. In the second stage, we want to help them navigate the challenges at each stage. So at each stage of development, the child-centered parenting is to help the child resolve those conflicts. Okay.
Absolutely.
Now the third,
right.
The so third leg is,
the first leg of the stool was temperament, the child's temperament, right. This child. The second leg is this this idea of the psychosocial stages of development. And the third, which
is the most difficult.
But it also fits well with the example of a three-legged stool is the balancing act.
Right.
This idea of balancing all of these issues so that the child can function and develop in a healthy way.
Right. And when we talk about the balancing act, we're parents. We have children. We know that kids are sometimes going to do things we don't want them to do. Parenting. The parenting has two. A parent has two fundamental responsibilities.
Right.
We think the first one is to provide. Our first responsibility is to provide circumstances that encourage children to develop, to find, and to develop their gifts, whatever they happen to be, whether school or art or academics or whatever. We want to encourage, and we do that by helping them resolve these conflicts that we talked about earlier.
Right.
But there's a second fundamental responsibility that parents have, and that is to establish and maintain boundaries so that your child learns to function in the world as it is, not to impose their behavior on others. Right. What do we mean by functioning in the world as it is? It's my responsibility as a parent to get my child ready for kindergarten as kindergartens are structured. Not to raise my child. I don't want to. The mistake I would make is to raise a child who can't fit in a regular kindergarten, who can't function in that social setting. That's my responsibility. Get my child ready to function in this larger social context with other people, other kids, and other adults.
Right.
And the second thing is to make sure that my child doesn't impose their behavior on others. What do I mean by that? What we mean by that is my child shouldn't be physically aggressive with other kids. My child shouldn't have temper tantrums in the grocery store. That's my responsibility as a parent to make sure that my child isn't imposing their behavior, their needs, wants, desires, or emotions on other people. Okay. Right. So we have two responsibilities. One is to encourage, but the other is to maintain boundaries. And that's a delicate and difficult balancing act that can be very challenging for many parents.
Right. And as I hope everyone listening to this can tell, is that part of that, your ability to engage in that balancing act depends on the child's temperament. You know, some kids are very difficult,
right.
Very challenging. And so, you know, as you said about imposing their behavior on others, you know, there are many kids who, you know, during certain stages of development, bringing in that second leg, right. You might not want to take them to the grocery store because the grocery store is too overstimulating. There's just too much going on there and they are not able to control and manage themselves. And so part of your boundaries that you develop for them is that, you know, they're not going to be able to handle those kinds of places right now. And so we have to wait, you know, shop at a time when they are with someone else or they're at school or something like that, or daycare or something.
That's right.
But this also falls into line with what we've talked about before as it relates to socialization. Kids, you know, when you talk about being prepared for kindergarten, what we're really talking about here is not, you know, idle conforming to, you know, meeting some, broad social expectation of some, it is, you know, your kid has to be able to sit in a room with other kids without hurting anyone or without causing damage or anything. And they have to be able to take instruction from someone else. They have to be able to hear what a teacher says and follow the expectations and meet the expectations of the teacher. There are many kids who, you know, start kindergarten and the only person that can get them to do anything is mom. Well, that's a problem because now they're in school and they have to be able to take directions from someone else. And you're right. It's our responsibility as parents to help prepare our kid for that. Now you're not going to prepare your 18-month-old for that because your 18-month-old is going to have a really difficult time for that. They're still going to have stranger anxiety and things like that. But by the time they're approaching school age, they should have that skill.
Right. That's right. I'm glad you used the word socialize because that's exactly what we have to do. They have to be able to function in this larger social environment. They have to fit into that and be able to function there. Now, what happens with the balancing act is that at every stage of development, infancy, early childhood, preschool, elementary school, middle school, at every stage of development, beginning with the terrible twos, you don't have to worry about this in kids younger than that because that's not an issue.
Right.
Beginning with the terrible twos, children are going to say and do things that far exceed your tolerance as a parent, okay? But we have to keep in mind that children and students, if we talk about schools, are not the enemy. In fact, they're not even they're not opponents. They're not our enemy, okay? What we do know is this. Kids will do things we don't want them to do. I don't care how good a parent you are. Right. I don't care what the child's temperament is. Kids are going to do things we don't want them to do. The balancing act is to figure out how to maintain those positive conditions for a child to blossom, but at the same time, keeping the boundaries up. You know, the child has to know where those limits are and reacting appropriately to those times when they do things that we don't want them to do. Now, in episode two, the episode we did last week, we said that one of the fundamental mistakes that parents make is that they wait for a child to misbehave, or they see a misbehavior, or they hear about a misbehavior, or that the child broke a rule, and then the parent reacts with consequences. The problem with this is the parent is investing energy and effort at the wrong place.
Right.
And they're expecting a return on that investment. You know, I'm going to do this and something should happen. And we talked about the ABCs of parenting. So we're going to go back to that notion of the ABCs. Remember that we want parents to invest in A rather than C. A is all the antecedent conditions, all the things that that help us prevent problems, that help us get the child to where we want the child to be, to have circumstances to create. So you mentioned earlier, don't take a tired and hungry child to a grocery store because it's probably not going to end well, right? And so those are the A's, those are the antecedent conditions. And so we want to spend more time at A and less time with C. But before we talk more about this, we want to talk a little bit about B. And B is the behavior.
Right.
And behavior has a brother. And his brother's name is misbehavior.
Yeah. And that's going to be, you know, next week, we're going to focus a lot on behavior and this brother, misbehavior. And I know when we write about misbehavior, we often put miss, the M-I-S, in little brackets because, you know, behavior is behavior. Behavior, just about every behavior that you can consider is appropriate at some times and inappropriate at other times. And so we're going to spend some time next week talking about behavior and misbehavior and help you understand a little bit more about maybe some different perspectives and different ways to think about behavior in general. But for now, you know, focus, we want you to think about and focus on this idea of balancing between the child's temperament you know, understanding where they are in their stages of development, and that balancing act between, you know, allowing your child to express themselves and explore things while also providing some general boundaries and expectations to provide some framework within within which their behavior presents.
Right, that's right. And so that the next episode we'll talk about behavior and misbehavior. And again, we want you to think about those things a little bit differently. That's what we're asking you to do. And, yeah, and we know we're doing that, but we want you to rethink how you define behavior and how you define misbehavior, because that will guide the next episode, which is what exactly do you do at each stage of development to maintain boundaries while still giving children an opportunity to grow and to develop.
Absolutely. So that's it for today. Until next time, when we get to talk about that behavior and misbehavior. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.